I fully intend to break through the system and no one can stop me. Like Lara Croft, but without all the killing people. Merrick looked confused. Sorry, got a little ranty there. But my point is that here, ideally, anyone can be anything, especially in L.A. That's kind of why this city is awesome. Merrick didn't respond with a snarky comeback. He looked out over the city, his expression thoughtful. Anything? Anything, so long as you work at it and aren't such a dick all the time. Merrick either didn't notice the insult or didn't know what it meant. He continued to stare out over the Hollywood Hills, still lost in thought. Liv checked the time on her cell phone. I gotta go meet Shannon. Merrick nodded, and Liv turned and walked toward the observatory. She passed the statue of James Dean's head and the group of tourists who were posing around it. She made her way through families and amateur photographers, slipping inside and taking the elevator that led to the rooftop observation area. Although it was easily the coolest part of the whole building, the rooftop was often empty of visitors and tourists. Liv walked to the waist-high cement wall that lined the area and sat down before peering over. From up high, she could see Cedric and Kat rejoining Merrick, tiny shapes in the parking lot. It was 5 minutes before she and Shannon were supposed to meet, so Liv expected her best friend to show up any time within the next half hour. She was surprised to hear footsteps approaching from behind just a few minutes later. The world must really be ending if you showed up on time. Liv turned, her words cut short when she saw who was approaching. Hello, Olivia. Joe stopped a few feet away. He clasped his scuffed leather briefcase in front of him. His expression was so full of disappointment that Liv averted her eyes. Shannon told you I'd be here? She asked. She set me up? Don't blame her. She's worried about you. Plus, I was pretty persuasive. Joe took a seat on the half wall next to Liv. She didn't move over to make more room for him, and he perched there awkwardly. There was once a time when I didn't have to stoop to subterfuge to see you, he said, and he set his briefcase down on the roof. He opened it and pulled out a manila folder. I have to show you something, Joe continued, his voice somber. He flipped open the folder and put it on Liv's lap. She assumed the folder would contain information on her next placement, but the second she looked down at it, her stomach dropped. Cedric's face was staring back at her. The image of him was grainy, taken from a security camera that must have been outside the museum. He was facing off against a man in a torn T-shirt. Although his back was to the camera, Liv knew the man was actually a Wrath. In the photo, Cedric was very clearly aiming his sword in the Wrath's direction. Liv flipped through the rest of the pictures quickly, and in one, she saw herself in the corner of the frame. Her back was to the camera, her hair flying behind her, but it was definitely her. They haven't identified you yet, Joe said, rubbing his hands over his eyes. I hope it's not a mistake that I haven't turned you in. Joe, I can explain. Your little friend with the sword is wanted for assault and battery, and for connection to the assault of a police officer. That wasn't him. It was the what? Liv breathed in deep. How could she explain this in a way that wouldn't cause Joe to label her as potentially deranged in her file? Do you have any idea what you've gotten yourself into? Joe's voice started to rise, but not in anger, Liv realized. In fear. I know what it looks like, Joe, but you have to trust me. This boy, Cedric, he wasn't the one who hurt that cop. Liv trailed off, and she looked away from Joe. He took the folder back and flipped to the last picture, a blown-up image of Cedric and his sword. Its hilt had markings carved onto it. They were visible, though grainy. And where did he get this? Liv tried to think up a quick answer, but Joe didn't wait for her to respond. Look at the markings on this sword. Do they look familiar to you? That was odd. Joe should have been asking why Liv was hanging around guys with swords, but instead he noticed the markings. Liv's throat suddenly felt dry, and her mind was spinning. She knew that Joe had seen her tattoo before. He was the one who had taken her away from the Hannigans after they'd given it to her. In fact, he was the one who told her the tattoo had come from the Hannigans in the first place. And she'd always believed him. Why wouldn't she? He was Joe. Solid, reliable Joe. "There are things I have to tell you, Liv." Joe set the file down and turned to face her. "Things I wanted to protect you from, but I think that maybe not telling you has put you in even greater danger." Joe's voice grew fuzzy in Liv's ears. "What are you saying?" Joe reached out and took one of her hands into his. He looked directly at her, with those same clear, comforting eyes that she had been able to count on for almost her entire life. "What are you saying, Joe?"
"I'm saying that you're special. You were born with a type of ability. A strange and rare ability, but one that could attract dangerous people."
Joe's eyes searched Liv's face as she tried to process what he was saying. She yanked her hand from Joe's and looked down over the edge of the wall, at the ground, and the people milling below. She couldn't focus on any one person. They all seemed to be spinning, going in and out of focus as she stared. For just a moment, it seemed as though the bottom of the world had just dropped out beneath her, and she was just seconds from tumbling down, down, down.
"You know," she managed to whisper,
tearing her eyes away from the ground and back to Joe.
"You know what I am? What the tattoo does? Everything?"
"Liv, no!" She pushed herself backward from him.
"I almost died last night. We went looking for information, and some knight tried to kill me, and all this time you knew everything?"
Joe looked like he might be sick. "They found you, the Knights of Valair." He ran his free hand through what was left of his hair.
"Thank God you're still alive."
"I wouldn't have been in danger at all if I'd known.
We would never have gone to the professor, never put ourselves in that position. Why didn't you tell me? And how did you know?"
"I only ever wanted to keep you safe," Joe said, his whole body sagging like a puppet whose strings had been cut.
"I promise, Liv."
"Don't promise, explain. I don't even know where to start. Let's start with the tattoo, or the scroll, or whatever it is," Liv said. "Did the Hannigans even have anything to do with it, or was that a lie?"
Joe looked at the ground for just a moment.
"They didn't give it to you. It's not really a tattoo at all. You were born with it, although it was probably faint and small enough to pass for an odd birthmark at first. That's the way it works with all children of the Skrulls. They're born with the markings, but they don't start to darken until the fifth or sixth year."
Liv blinked furiously, trying to reconcile her own memories with this new truth.
"So there's no way to get rid of it? The marking?"
Joe shook his head, his eyes sad.
"Your marking didn't really show itself until you were already with the Hannigans. When they found it, the way they treated you, they said you were marked by the devil. They called you unclean. I took you out of there as soon as I could, Liv.
But you let me believe it was just a tattoo, that they'd given it to me. It was safer for you to blame the Hannigans than to know the truth."
"I'm gonna have to disagree," Liv said, unable to keep the acid from her voice. "But since you mentioned the truth, let's have it. Start from the beginning."
Joe shifted slightly on the wall.
"It's not a coincidence that I'm your social worker. I got into this job with the express purpose of tracking down more Skrull children so that I might protect them before it was too late."
"More children? So you've met people like me before?"
"Liv," Joe said, his voice taking on a weary, resigned tone. "It's easiest if I just show you."
With that, he turned on the half-wall so that his back was facing Liv. He reached up to the collar of his t-shirt and pulled it down just below his neck, so it showed a line of skin just above his collarbone. The skin was marked with thin, dark writing. "I knew what you were, because it's what I am too," Joe said, his face still turned away. "A child of the scrolls." The Legend of the Scrolls. Joe turned back around to face a still speechless Liv. Liv struggled to form a complete sentence. The sun beat down on the roof, and she could feel a bead of sweat drip down from the edge of her hairline. "My parents discovered the markings shortly after I was born. My brothers John and Eric were born with them as well. At first they were faint, just white lines like you might see from a fading scar. The doctors didn't know what they were. No one knew. But the markings grew deeper and darker, and by the time each of us was 6 years old, they resembled full-on tattoos." Liv tried to picture Joe as a child, but it was impossible to see him as anything other than the fully grown, bearded, responsible Joe he'd always been. "My parents weren't marked," Joe continued. "The children of the Scrolls are born randomly to one family in each generation. There are always three of them." Liv's breath caught in her throat. She saw the image of a skinny boy pushing her through a window, a toddler sitting on the grass as her house burned down in front of their eyes. "Peter. Maisie?" She couldn't finish the sentence. Their names stuck to the side of her throat. "Yes, your brother and sister are marked as well. After your parents died, you were immediately taken into protective care. Your information entered into a social services database. I had flagged the system to report any instances of children with unusual markings or tattoos. Peter already had full-fledged markings. I immediately signed on to take your case. Since the first day I met you, Liv, I've done nothing but try to keep you safe." Liv swallowed, looking away from Joe's concerned face. Her eyes scanned the empty roof. She thought she saw a slight blur of movement next to the nearest telescope structure that jutted out from the building, but the next instant, it was gone. "I only wish I'd found your family sooner, before it was too late." Liv turned her eyes back to Joe. "What do you mean, too late?" Joe reached out and laid one hand gently on Liv's arm. "I know there's no excuse, Liv. I was looking for Scroll children, but the Knights were looking too. They've been doing this for years, centuries, and have more resources than I do. They find Scrolls early, and they..." "I know what they do," Liv whispered. "Unfortunately, they've gotten good at it. If any Scrolls before me have ever slipped the Knights' notice and survived, I have not been able to find them. The Knights probably check schools or doctor's offices. From his medical records, I know Peter was taken in for consultations because of his markings. Your parents must have been concerned, scared even, to not know what the markings meant or why they were getting darker." "Doctor's visits?" She searched her memories but came up with nothing. "I don't remember that," Liv said. "You were so young," Joe responded. "Your parents might not have told you, but they did see doctors, and one of them may have contacted the Knights, given them your address." Joe looked Liv in the eyes, and suddenly she knew what he was about to say. She shook her head in disbelief, even as the words fell from his mouth. "Liv, they set fire to your house, trying to kill you all, you, Peter, and Maisie. The Knights wanted you dead." Liv's shoulders fell, her muscles suddenly slack. She felt as though her throat was closing up, squeezing out all the air. "I'm so sorry. So, so sorry." Joe reached out to steady Liv, and she realized she was slumping downward. "But it was me," she choked out. "It was... I..." With effort, Liv sucked in a breath around the apple-sized lump in her throat and continued. "The candle. I lit a candle that night. That was why." Joe's eyes widened. No. Oh, Liv, no. It wasn't you.
He looked at her with more pity in his eyes than she could handle.
I lit a candle that night. I remember doing it. I remember.
Even if you lit a candle, the police found your house doused in kerosene and ruled it arson. It was the night's.
I'm so sorry, Liv. I didn't want you knowing your parents were murdered. You were so young, and I figured it would be best if you thought it was an accident.
But you didn't. All this time you thought,
oh, God, how could I not have known?
It wasn't a question Liv was meant to answer, but she could feel her head making a tiny jerking motion anyway.
I didn't tell you. I didn't tell anyone. I couldn't.
Liv thought of all the nights she had closed her eyes before going to sleep, trying to conjure up the images of her parents' faces in her mind so that she wouldn't forget them. She thought of all the other nights that she tried to scrub their images from the backs of her eyelids so that she might.
It wasn't your fault, Liv. Not at all.
Something broke open inside of her, and she realized that it was too late and too hard to close it back up in time. The cry tore from her throat and muffled itself against Joe's shoulder when he reached to hug her. And once she started, she couldn't stop. Sobs built in her throat and exploded outward, seeming to rip up her insides as they did so. It hurt. She cried and cried, her eyes burning, mouth open against Joe's flannel shirt. Eventually, her breathing began to even out. The tears dried up on her cheeks. She had no idea how long she had been leaning against Joe, although it had felt like a long time. Endless. She pushed herself upright and wiped at her eyes, taking in one long, shuddering breath.
"Are you okay?" Joe asked.
Liv sniffed deeply and nodded. A new thought occurred to her then, one that caused a flash of fear to pulse through her body. She jumped up from the half wall, looking down at Joe.
"The knight who threatened me. He said he would kill me for being a child of the Scrolls. Do you think he would go after Peter and Maisie? Are they safe?"
"After the fire, I split you up immediately and gave you new last names. I'd hoped it was enough to keep the knights at bay. They would have known you survived the fire, but I made it difficult to track you down. Peter had recognizable markings by that point, so I sent him north. As a younger child, Maisie was adopted pretty quickly.
You were trickier, but bouncing around from foster home to foster home has helped, I think. I kept your markings out of the system, and there's no sign they had any idea where you were."
"Until now," Liv whispered. Without thinking, she started to pace in front of where Joe was sitting.
"I should never have gone to the professor. If I hadn't, none of this, why did you go there?"
Liv paused, conflicted. She glanced out over the green yard in front of the observatory, looking for Cedric, but he wasn't standing where he had been before. It wouldn't betray him, really, to tell his secret, would it? They needed all the help they could get. And Joe was a Scroll, too. He would believe her. Liv took a deep breath and launched into her story, starting with the day she first saw Cedric down by the riverbed. When she mentioned the LA River, Joe's eyes flashed briefly, as though he wanted to interrupt, but he let her continue until the end. When she finished, she sighed heavily and sat back down on the half wall.
"I couldn't tell anyone," she said. "I thought you'd think I was crazy. I kind of still think I might be."
"You're not," Joe said, "but you may be in even more trouble than I realized." Liv snorted. "That should be the subtitle of my autobiography. I've never seen a Wrath before, or a... what did you call them? Guardians?" Joe continued, looking down again at the sword. "The lore I've learned about Calum and its origins was always murky. The only dangers I knew of firsthand were the ones that existed in this world. The portals and the knights, of course."
"The portals? How are they dangerous?"
Joe once again ran a hand through his hair. "I told you that I was one of three brothers, each of us children of the Scrolls. When our markings darkened, our parents were confused and scared.
They took us to specialists, and that drew the attention of the Knights. The Knights picked up Eric and John as they walked home from school. I was out sick that day.
Joe paused, his eyes dark and far away.
They just drove by in a dark van and swooped my brothers up so quickly that no one on the block even noticed. John, my older brother, managed to escape when the van stopped at a red light. He couldn't get Eric out, and he just ran. We never saw Eric again.
Oh, my God, Liv whispered. I'm so sorry, Joe.
Joe nodded, but seemed eager to move on with his story. John was convinced the Knights would come back for him. He'd heard them talking and knew they would never leave him alone. My parents and the police thought the people who kidnapped my brother belonged to a fanatical cult. And I guess in some ways, that was true. But my brother shared with me the truth that my parents couldn't accept, because the Knights had told him what he was and what he could do. We ended up moving to Los Angeles to start over. My parents wanted to grieve for their lost son and get on with their lives. So did I. But John could never get past what had happened. When the hunt for Eric stopped, he grew angrier and more obsessed with the Knights. He devoted his life to learning about the organization. What little information I have about them I got from John. Once he was out on his own, John finally found a way to use the scrolls on our backs to open a portal. As far as he could tell, no portal had been opened on Earth in hundreds of years, and he was determined to give it a try. He said it's what we were born to do. Joe paused and took a breath, shielding his eyes as he looked out over the edge of the observatory wall at the hills rising up beyond. While he looked out, Liv's gaze drifted back over to the opposite wall of the roof. Behind the small building that housed the telescope, she once again saw a blur of movement. Only this time, it didn't move quickly enough. She saw exactly what, or rather, who, was listening to her conversation with Joe. Cedric hadn't been content to watch from a distance, after all. Joe sighed. John was always persuasive, especially when he was passionate about something. And it was exciting to think we might have some kind of power, that we had been chosen for something bigger, and we were both so young, barely in our 20s then.
Did you manage to do it?
Yes, though I wish every day that we hadn't. Joe sighed. John had to go to a lot of shady people to find the right documents to translate the markings, and when he did, he used them to open a portal on the banks of the L.A. River.
The river, Liv murmured, remembering the night Cedric and his friends had come through the portal. Could it be the same place, the very same portal?
Yes. When you mentioned it earlier, I thought it was quite the coincidence, too, Joe said with a sigh. We wanted to find somewhere out of the way. I really only half believed opening the portal would work, but John never had any doubts. For him, it wasn't a matter of if he could travel to another dimension, but when.
Joe exhaled in one long, shaky breath. Liv realized it was possible that he'd never told this story to another person before. She wondered how different things might have been if she and Joe had been honest with each other from the beginning. How much less alone they might have been.
The portal itself was terrifying. A giant black hole that opened up right in the middle of the concrete wall under a bridge. It scared me, and I changed my mind right then. Not John, though. I'll never forget the way his eyes looked when he stared into the portal. He was hypnotized. I asked him to stop, to think about what he was doing, but John didn't even turn around. I watched him walk into the portal as easily as if he were walking into another room. And then I saw it swallow him, and I heard him scream. Joe closed his eyes as if he was trying to shut out the image once again. I ran to the portal to try to pull him back, but I was too late. I couldn't see him, but I could hear him crying out. I could hear the sound of bones breaking. I yelled after him, but I'll never know if he heard me, because that's when the bridge came down.
What?
Joe opened his eyes, but they were far, far away. The ground began to shake, and the foundation of the bridge began to split. It was so old, it smashed to pieces when it hit the ground. Emergency workers searched through the rubble, but they never found John. He was just gone.
Oh. Liv wanted to apologize or say something comforting, but before she could think of the right thing, Joe grabbed her shoulder.
You have to listen to me, Liv. You and I were born to open portals, but the portals aren't meant for us. They're meant to use us, to chew us up and spit us out. Wraths, and apparently even the Guardians, might be able to cross through them unharmed, but not us. Do you understand? That earthquake, I don't think it was a coincidence. What John did was against the laws of nature, and the earthquake was a reaction to that.
The laws of nature. Something in Joe's words reminded Liv of the professor and how he spoke of the quelling theory. He had said magic didn't belong in this world anymore. But where did that leave Cedric? She remembered the way his face looked whenever he talked about his home.
Cedric and his friends don't belong here, she finally said, her voice quiet. They need to go back.
Slowly, Joe shook his head. I'm sorry that your new friends are stuck here, but I won't risk losing you. Not that way.
You won't, Joe. But they've saved my life more than once. What if I just open the portal for them? If you show me how to open it, but not go through it myself?
It's still dangerous. The consequences... We could go somewhere far from the city. If there's another earthquake, it won't hurt anyone.
Joe breathed in through his nostrils, eyes focused hard on the ground.
I'd rather do it with your help than without it. But no matter what, I'll figure out a way, Liv said. I have to help them, like you've always helped me.
All right, he finally said. You and I will figure out a safe way to send your friends home, just as long as you promise not to make any moves without me.
Liv nodded, solemn.
There's something else, too, she started, careful to keep her voice neutral.
I get that you kept all this a secret from me to protect me, but it didn't work.
Who?
What?
I am?
It caught up with me. I don't want it to be that way for Peter or Maisie. The less they know, the less safe they are.
Joe still looked doubtful, so Liv kept pushing.
Especially now. The Knights know for sure that I'm alive and in L.A. What if they start looking for Peter and Maisie again, too? They have a right to know what might be coming for them.
Joe sat still for a moment, then nodded.
They might not believe us.
We can make them.
Liv stood up, and together they started to make their way back to the roof's main doorway. Liv let Joe walk a few paces ahead as they rounded the telescope building. Without breaking stride, she turned her head and saw Cedric standing there, leaning against the building. When she saw his face, her heart thudded painfully. How much of the conversation had he heard? She sucked in her breath and held his gaze. She wasn't paying attention to where her feet were taking her, and she smacked hard into Joe's back.
Sorry, she said, turning her head back around and giving Joe an apologetic smile.
He smiled back and reached for the door handle. Liv whipped her head back around to find Cedric again, but the space was empty. As they walked down the stairs and into the observatory's main lobby, Joe explained to Liv that Shannon was waiting for them in the parking lot. She'd told Joe where he could find Liv, but only on the condition that she could come along.
I want to tell her about all this, Liv said. I don't want to keep any more secrets.
Joe considered this as they wove their way toward the exit. It's up to you. Shannon had obviously not been content to wait in the car. She dashed up the steps toward Liv and Joe, with Merrick and Kat close behind her.
I'm so sorry, Liv, Shannon started. I was worried about you, and Joe kept calling, and I'm so...
Liv held up her hand. It's okay. You don't need to apologize.
Great. So now will you please tell me what's going on?
Shannon's face was such a mixture of confusion and impatience that Liv nearly burst out laughing.
You're sure you want to know?
Shannon raised her eyebrows.
Are you joking?
You're joking. You can't be asking me that question in any kind of seriousness. When have I not wanted to know what's going on?
Can she be trusted?
Kat asked.
Excuse me? Can I be trusted?
Who even are you?
Yes, Liv said quickly, cutting off Shannon's outrage. She can.
A shadow fell over her. She looked back up the steps and saw Cedric coming down.
You must be Cedric, Joe said, reaching out to shake Cedric's hand.
I'm Joe.
Cedric nodded in response.
How much did you hear?
Liv asked Cedric. His eyes flicked over to Liv, briefly. She tried to imagine what he was thinking, and failed.
I heard that Joe can help us open the portal, Cedric replied.
Portal?
Shannon's voice rose in pitch. A couple passing behind Cedric on the steps looked over at them.
Let's move clear of the crowds, maybe, Liv said, directing their small group to a small side lawn.
I can open a portal, Joe said once they were away from the tourists and school kids. But my first priority is to protect Liv and her brother and sister, Joe said. Then we'll figure out how to open the portal as safely as possible, without anyone getting hurt.
And again, I say, portal? Shannon's eyes were wide.
Okay, calm down, Liv said, putting a hand on her arm. I'll tell you everything, but you have to wait a few more minutes. Please?
Liv turned back to Cedric and Joe.
We need to make sure Peter and Maisie are safe, that they know about everything so they can protect themselves. Her eyes went to Cedric.
That's the way it has to be.
He nodded slowly. She wondered if he was thinking about Em. Did he understand why she was putting her sibling's safety before his desire to go home? Or did he resent that she was keeping him from his own sister with every passing second?
Peter's up near Fresno, Joe said. His life was a lot like yours, Liv. He moved from foster home to foster home. He graduated from high school this year, but I know how to find him.
Liv's inside swelled at the thought of her brother, grown up now. Quiet Peter, with the serious, worrying eyes.
You're going up there?
Somehow, I don't think this is information to deliver over the phone, Joe replied.
Your sister's much closer, Joe said, hesitation in his voice.
I don't think we need to worry much about her safety. She should be highly protected already. Peter's more vulnerable, more alone.
What do you mean, Maisie's highly protected already? Where is she?
Beverly Hills. Her adopted family lives there.
Wow, that's
good for her. Liv tried to keep the tinge of jealousy out of her voice.
Doesn't really answer my question, though.
Joe ran a hand through his hair.
Maisie's family is a bit high profile. She has lots of security. And another thing you should know, her new family changed her first name as well.
What?
Liv shook her head.
Why? How? You can't just change a 4-year-old's name. She's not a dog.
This family could. They only changed a letter, though.
Liv couldn't understand why Joe was being so cagey. Before she could think it over, Shannon burst out with a sudden yelp.
Oh, my God. Is your sister Maisie actually... Oh, my God.
What? Liv swirled on Shannon.
Out with it.
Daisy Ratner, as in the third adopted daughter of Michael Ratner and Shayna Cole?
Joe nodded.
Oh, my God, Liv said.
Who are they?
Cedric asked, brow furrowed. Next to him, Kat shrugged. Merrick looked bored.
Movie stars, Liv answered, finally understanding Joe's warning.
Very, very famous ones.
They adopted, like, all these kids, and then they named them after flowers, Shannon continued in a rush.
She turned to Liv. Didn't you know that? Everyone knows that.
Liv shrugged. I mean, I know how their last two films did at the box office, but gossip stuff I never really paid attention. I told you to get that Us Weekly app, but no, you said it would clutter up your precious screen. Shannon, sorry. Shannon looked just a bit chastised. She pulled out her phone. But if you did have the app, you would know Daisy's not even in the country. Michael Ratner is in Nicaragua right now shooting a movie, and he always brings his family with him on location. Shannon turned the screen to Liv. She saw a small picture of the movie star, Michael Ratner, all sunglasses and big teeth, moving through an airport. A group of people trailed him, but Liv couldn't pick out Maisie or Daisy among them. Liv took a deep breath, then forced herself to look away from the screen and toward Joe. Okay, so Maisie's safe for now, and you're going to tell Peter what's going on. What about you? Joe asked. Liv looked past him to Cedric, who looked like he was still desperately trying to figure out what Us Weekly was. But even in his state of obvious confusion, his posture was all readiness. His shoulders were back, his fingers just inches from where his knife rested against the inseam of his jeans. Always prepared for battle. I'll be protected too. The last meal. Joe offered to give Shannon a ride home from the observatory, but she insisted on staying with Liv and hearing the whole insane story. Shan, aren't you still grounded? Liv whispered to her as they walked to her car. Probably, Shannon replied, but Joe doesn't know that. Before they parted ways, Joe pressed a few fifties into Liv's hand and told her to stay near her phone. Liv used one of the fifties to buy some pizzas and take them back to the Echo Park house. She, Cedric, Kat, Merrick, and now Shannon hungrily attacked the food while sitting around the table on the back patio. Shannon had listened silently, well, mostly silently, as Liv caught her up on the main details of how she'd met Cedric and what her tattoo really was. She seemed skeptical, but at least she hadn't run away screaming yet. Liv was glad to have her around, especially since Cedric and his friends were casting pointed looks in her direction every few moments or so while they discussed strategy over bites of sausage pizza. Liv tried to pay attention, but her mind kept drifting to Peter and Maisie, or Daisy, now, as if she'd ever get used to that. She kept picturing them as she last saw them, tired and worn-looking in a temporary children's home. For so long, thinking about her brother and sister had only brought up feelings of shame and fear. Shame for what she thought she'd done to her parents, and fear of what her siblings thought of her. It was difficult to replace those long-standing emotions with what she now knew. Besides, the fear was still there, only attached to new worries. What if Peter and Maisie, now Daisy, didn't believe they were in danger? What if Joe couldn't figure out a way to keep them safe? The questions were eating her up. "This meal is not as good as yesterday's," Merrick said, putting down a piece of pizza crust and dragging Liv's attention from her thoughts. "Yeah, L.A. is really more of a burger town," she replied, trying to force herself to pay attention to the conversation. "Or kale, if you're into that kind of thing," Shannon said. "What is kale?" Merrick asked. "It's best you don't know," Liv said. Shannon smiled, but briefly. She seemed to be handling this pretty well, Liv thought, although if this were any other day, Shannon would be taking this opportunity to list all the celebrities she knew of who were on all kale diets. Across the table, Kat put her slice of pizza down as well. "Enough nonsense. We need to determine what to do next. We should open a portal as soon as possible." "We said we'd wait for Joe," Liv interrupted. "Yes, but we should have a plan ready to put in action immediately upon his return." Kat spoke slowly, as if to a small child. Liv pursed her lips to keep from saying something snarky. "The next step should be to make sure Liv is safe from the Wraths and the Knights of Valair before we leave for Calum," Cedric said. "That could take days, or longer. We have nothing to do with these knights. Meanwhile,
Our kingdom, our home, is under siege.
Kat looked back and forth between Cedric and Merrick, her dark eyes alight with energy. You know I am right. We have the scroll. We could be going home tomorrow. We cannot ask Liv to help us get home and then leave her in danger. We wait, just until we know she is safe, Cedric said definitively. That is final.
Kat flared her nostrils, but didn't respond.
Not so fun when he does that to you, is it? Merrick asked Kat with a smug smile.
And there is more to consider, Cedric continued, ignoring Merrick. We want to go home as soon as possible, of course, but think about it. What are we going back for, if not to fight Malquin? Yet we know so little about him.
Kat leaned back and crossed her arms, but didn't argue.
Always know your enemy, Cedric continued. My father always says that.
Know not just your opponent's strengths and weaknesses, but their desires. And right now, all we know is that Malquin invaded the palace and he wants Liv. But we do not know why.
And that matters, Merrick piped up.
To Liv's surprise, it was Kat who responded, though she still sounded pissed off.
We cannot defeat him if we do not know what he wants.
Why he aligned with Wraths to invade our castle in the first place, and what he wants with Liv, they might be connected, Cedric added.
So what do we do? Kat asked.
Cedric let out a relieved sigh, like he just won a fight he'd been dreading.
We have to figure out what the Wraths want with Liv, and what their ultimate goal is, and we have to act before they make their next move.
We take the fight to them, Kat said, nodding, and they lead us to Malquin, or at least whoever he has in charge over here.
Cedric responded.
Tonight.
He leaned forward, his determined eyes meeting those of everyone at the table.
Liv thought he suddenly looked like a general during the inspirational monologue scene of a war movie, an effect that was only slightly hampered by the sausage grease stain on his t-shirt.
We should return to the area around the museum again. It's the last place we knew for sure the Wraths were tracking us, Kat said.
Cedric nodded. If the Wraths are still looking for us there, it should not be too difficult to find them.
Did you know the word Malquin brings up 33,000 hits online?
Shannon interrupted, looking up from her phone and around the table.
I mean, I don't think any of them are relevant to you guys, but...
Everyone stared.
Just trying to be helpful, Shannon said, shrugging.
Liv smiled, for what felt like the first time in hours. She was so happy Shannon was here.
Anyway, Cedric said, the Wrath Kat questioned before did not know where Malquin is or what he is planning, but one of them has to. We just have to keep looking until...
Oh, my God.
Shannon shot up in her chair, hand-gripping her phone.
What is it now?
Kat asked, exasperated.
Shannon turned to Liv. It's your sister, Daisy.
Maisie.
I assumed she'd be in Nicaragua with her parents, but I just checked her Instagram, and she's here. In L.A.
Are you sure?
Liv reached out and took Shannon's phone. On the screen was a sun-drenched image of a tennis court, an image posted by one DaisyStar02. The text below the image read, hashtag Saturday, hashtag bored.
That's the tennis court in the Ratner's backyard. I saw an aerial shot of it in Life and Style.
Shan, your borderline stalking abilities are finally paying off.
It's not stalking. She's got like 40,000 followers.
What does all of this mean?
Cedric asked. With difficulty, Liv pulled her focus away from the screen. More than anything, she wanted to keep scrolling through Maisie's pictures to get a better sense of her life. But the utter confusion on Cedric's face forced her to be in the present moment.
Daisy is here.
In L.A., Liv said.
Kat shook her head. What does that matter?
Shannon's mouth dropped open.
What do you mean, what does that matter? Do you people not have hearts on whatever planet you're from?
Kat raised one cool eyebrow.
We have more heart than the people here, I assure you.
Not as far as I can tell, Ice Queen. Shannon shot back. Merrick laughed, but Liv just rubbed her temples. A plan was swirling around in her head. A crazy plan. One that would go against everything she'd promised Joe, and would surely piss him off. Not to mention how much it would piss off everyone at this table. Liv looked back down at the screen in her hand. A piece of her sister, so close. It felt impossible to finally know where she was after all these years. Liv could just go over to Maisie Daisy's house, introduce herself, and explain everything. How could she not do it? She looked up at Cedric and Kat. It matters because I thought my sister was safe, and now we know she's not. She's here, in L.A., where any wrath or night can find her. We need to warn her. Cedric shook his head and Liv's stomach sank. We have already decided on a plan, he said carefully. To track down the wraths tonight and finally determine what Malquin is after, why his wraths are after you. And if they get to my sister first? She is a Skrull just as much as I am, you know. And if you vowed to protect me, you should protect her, too. Cedric sighed. It is unlikely the wraths will find her. Unlikely? I don't want to bet my sister's life on unlikely. And we cannot bet our lives for hers, Kat said. Every day we stay here is dangerous. We need to use the knowledge we can get from the wraths to go home and free our parents. But you need me for that, don't you? I'm the Skrull. Liv dropped her voice low, wanting to make her point very clearly. She knew this was the one card she had left to play. And I won't help you get home unless I know my sister's okay first. Kat's eyes flared with anger. Merrick looked at Liv with an appraising stare. But it was Cedric's reaction Liv dreaded most. If that is what it will take, he finally said. This is not a good idea, Kat started. We need Liv's help, Cedric said. Now she has asked for something in return. And what is to stop her from asking for something else? Kat asked. I won't, Liv said. Cedric nodded. We can still move forward with our first plan, Kat. Are you up for taking another trip to the museum to see if you can track any more wraps? Kat looked at Liv with eyes that could spear right through her. Of course. Merrick can go with, Merrick can speak for himself, thank you, Merrick replied. He looked to Kat. I assume you do not need my help. She shrugged. I can track perfectly well on my own. Good, Merrick replied, because I would very much like to see more of this Beverly Hills, where an orphan girl of low birth might rise to live in a palace. Cedric looked confused, but Liv smiled, remembering their conversation at the observatory. I think you'll be impressed. And I'll just ignore that low birth comment. With everyone's part in the plan sorted, Liv stood up to collect the pizza boxes from the table. Her entire body felt heavy and slow, as if she'd just ran a marathon on 3 hours of sleep. Liv headed toward the house with the trash in her hands. Without saying a word, Shannon got up and followed her. As soon as they were safely alone in the kitchen, Liv collapsed against the counter. So, rough week? Shannon asked, leaning up against the wall across from Liv. Liv shook her head and managed a half laugh. How are you doing, really? Shannon asked. You're the one who just found out about other worlds and killer demon creatures. How are you doing? Shannon gave an exaggerated shrug. Oh, you know me. I like to roll with the punches. Oh, yeah. Liv laughed. That's definitely a reputation. Shannon taking it easy, May. Are you being sarcastic? Because I am easygoing. Sometimes. Shannon grinned. She looked so much like a part of Liv's regular, familiar world, with her chunky wedge shoes, hot green nails, and wide smile. It almost hurt. Seriously, though, Liv said, how are you handling all this? She motioned at the window behind her, toward where Cedric, Kat, and Merrick were probably cursing her name in new and creative ways.
I know it's a bit insane.
Seriously? Shannon said, winding one short strand of black and red hair absentmindedly around her finger. I don't know. I mean, yes, on the one hand, it's completely insane. But on the other, it doesn't seem that strange at all. All those years we spent watching movies about zombie apocalypses and alien invasions or whatever, it's like it prepared me, in a way. Like, I spent so many hours training for crazy without even realizing, and it would almost be weirder if something like this didn't happen at least once in our lives. You know?
Liv smiled. I actually think I do.
Besides, Shannon continued, I can totally use all this for motivation when I'm cast in the next Peter Jackson movie.
Liv laughed, then turned and looked again at the group sitting outside. From this distance, they looked so normal. Well, aside from the sword resting against the table.
Cedric was talking, his hands making large but calculated motions. For a moment, Liv just watched him. The intensity of his movements, the way his mouth moved when he spoke. Her mind wandered to the night before. To the two of them alone on that motel bed.
She shook the thoughts from her head and turned to Shannon. So what do you think? Have some free time to accompany me to Beverly Hills?
Like you have to ask.
Liv grinned. Shannon's gaze shifted to just over Liv's shoulder, and her eyes narrowed.
Who's that?
Liv whirled around. Through the other kitchen window that faced the side yard, she saw a quick-moving blur. Liv moved closer to the window to get a better look, and saw a thin girl with long, snarled hair moving along the side of the house. Liv threw open the window. Hey! She called out. The girl's head snapped up. Her face was pale white and streaked with dirt, and her eyes were round as marbles. Liv saw the shabby clothes she was wearing, recognized the desperation in her eyes. A runaway. Before she could say anything, the girl darted away, moving toward the street.
Hey! Liv yelled. You don't have to go!
She cut herself off. Ordinarily, she would welcome the young girl to the squatter house. After all, she'd been in that same position before. Lost, torn, alone. She looked at a box of half-eaten pizza and felt guilty. But then her gaze moved past the pizza boxes to the backyard, and she realized there was more danger for the runaway here than anywhere else.
Who was that?
Shannon asked, joining Liv at the window.
Just a street kid, looking for a place to crash, probably.
Anyone you know?
No, Liv said. She could have been anyone. Once upon a time, she could have been me. Or my sister.
Except that wasn't true. Not anymore. Liv no longer had to wonder where her siblings were, or worry that they were living on the streets. They were alive, and they were cared for, and she was going to see one of them. Today.
The Storming of the Castle. Liv drove slowly westward, watching as the lawns became greener, the houses larger, and the palm trees more neatly tended on the sides of the streets. With every mile they passed, her rusting clunker of a car stood out more and more amid the BMWs and Priuses. Liv thought about Maisie growing up in this world. She tried to imagine what her sister might look like now, as a 13-year-old girl. But all she could see was the tiny child in pigtails, who used to eat bubblegum-flavored ice cream, until half her face was stained pink and blue. Cedric stared out the window at the houses as they passed.
They're kind of grossly excessive, aren't they? Liv nodded to one giant mansion situated far back on a manicured lawn and fronted with a Greek-style colonnade.
Cedric continued to stare, and Liv wondered if he was icing her out for basically forcing him to change his catch-a-wrath plan. He was sitting as close to the window as possible, his body angled away from her.
The moment they'd shared at the hotel seemed so far away, almost like it had happened between two different people. Then Cedric turned to her, and his mouth lifted on one side into its customary half-smile.
"I have seen Grosse." "Don't expect him to be impressed," Merrick said from the back seat. "He does live in the largest castle in Calum."
"You want a castle?" Shannon asked. "Wait till we get to the Ratner's house. Now that place is a palace. It has, like, gold-plated everything. Even the plungers are platinum. Can you imagine?"
Merrick stared at her blankly.
"Guess not,"
Shannon breathed, turning her attention back out the window. Liv looked down at the map to the stars guide she'd picked up at a 7-Eleven. The Ratner Cole residence had a giant yellow star marking its location. "I think it's here," Liv said. She slowed the car down. Everyone turned their head to look out the right side windows, but all they could see was an 8-foot-high hedge. Liv eased the car along the side of the road, finally stopping just before an enormous iron gate with an intercom.
"What do we do?" Shannon asked,
catching Liv's eyes in the rearview mirror. Liv shrugged. "You're the resident celebrity stalker. Any ideas?"
"Would you stop with the stalker talk already? Jeez, you try to get backstage to see Justin Timberlake one time."
"Maybe we should just go up and ring the buzzer," Liv asked. Cedric craned his neck upward.
"I could vault that gate."
"Yeah, I'm not sure that's the best idea," Liv began. Her words were cut off by a rumbling sound. She turned in her seat and watched as a red double-decker bus crested the small rise in the road and slowed as it approached the Ratner's front gate, eventually coming to a wheezing stop. A sign on its side read, "Star Tours" in glittery letters, and Liv could see the faces of tourists pressed up against the windows.
"Ooh, I've always wanted to go on one of those things," Shannon said.
Liv raised an eyebrow in her direction.
"Okay, maybe I am kind of a stalker."
"What is it?" Cedric asked. His gaze rose to the second story of the bus, which featured more tourists sitting on plastic seats in the open air.
It's... Liv struggled to figure out how to explain the nature of Hollywood celebrity to Cedric, who was looking at her expectantly.
"You see, there are people here who are really famous, mostly for being in movies. And then other people come in from out of town and take these tours to see where the movie stars live." She let her voice trail off and shrugged, thinking she wasn't explaining it right. But instead of staring at her blankly, Cedric gave a knowing nod.
"Like petitioners."
"What?" Liv asked. "In Calum, petitioners came out to our palace on a daily basis. They are often townspeople making complaints, and my father set some time aside every morning to hear them. But sometimes they don't have legitimate complaints. They just want to get a look at inside of the throne room, or gossip about what my mother is wearing."
Shannon leaned up from the back seat. "Whoa, you have a throne room?"
Cedric gave a sheepish shrug and turned his attention back to the tour bus. Merrick scoffed.
"Nice false modesty, Highness. It is most becoming."
Shannon rolled her eyes at Merrick.
"Jealous much?"
Liv looked back at the bus, where a tour guide with a microphone was talking animatedly to the tourists on the top deck. With a sweeping gesture, she pointed toward the Ratner's house. Liv rolled the car window down to hear her.
"And as you all know, Michael Ratner and Shayna Cole have come a long way since they met on the set of Meteor in 1995.
"Ooh, I love that one," Shannon said. "The Ratners married in 1997 and moved to this mansion in 2000. They also have homes in Malibu, Rome, Hawaii, and Austin, Texas. Since their marriage, they have adopted 7 children from all over the world."
"Yeah, and changed their perfectly good names into stupid flowers," Liv muttered.
Shannon leaned up from the back seat to shush her.
"Look,"
Cedric whispered. Liv followed his gaze through the iron bars,
where two security guards dressed in white polo shirts and pressed black pants appeared seemingly out of nowhere to man the gate. They looked over the bus with bored but watchful expressions. Whoa, where did they come from?